Right, so can everyone hear me? I've had a cold and I'm a little hoarse, so if you can't hear me, just raise your hand for whatever reason. So I'm going to be talking to you about three human antibiotics that are going out into the environment due to reuse of wastewater treatment plant effluent. So Clinton was talking about Arizona, which is very arid. I'm going to be talking about in central Pennsylvania, which is pretty temperate, and specifically here at Penn State. And my study site is called the Living Filter. It's this little orange circle right here. It's cropped and forested lands. And so what exactly is the Living Filter at Penn State? It's actually a unique wastewater reuse system where they spray irrigate cropped and forested lands throughout the year. It's been going on for 40 years. And the irrigation rate is about 5 centimeters per week, which people like to say is the equivalent to a tropical rainforest. So there's a lot of water going onto this land. And so you're probably asking, why is Penn State reusing its wastewater? This is central Pennsylvania. We don't really have water shortages. We may have some droughts every once in a while, but it's not significant enough to push people towards reusing wastewater as they would in places like Arizona. And so really the purpose goes back to protecting fish in Spring Creek. Spring Creek is a premier trout fishing stream. There are some large-scale fish kills linked back to Penn State putting their effluent into the stream. So they had to find something else to do with their effluent, and they decided to irrigate agricultural and forested lands. And by doing so, they actually created a unique study site for scientists at Penn State. But they also thought of it as tertiary treatment of the effluent via the soil, recycling nutrients, and recharging groundwater. They saw this as a really good thing to be doing. However, the problem with that is whenever they started it, they didn't realize about, and many people didn't realize about, pharmaceuticals and personal care products being present in the effluent, wastewater treatment plants not being designed to completely remove these compounds. So you have these compounds going out into the environment, going into the soil, possibly reaching the groundwater system, maybe even having plant uptake. And so that's where my study is going to be focused on, and specifically on antibiotics. The reason for that is we know they're being found in the environment. I'm talking about human-made antibiotics. And there's concerns about antibiotic resistance in the environment and possible links back to human-animal health. And so to start off, I just did some general background research looking at what was actually being found in the environment, what was commonly being prescribed in the local area. And then I did a quick reconnaissance study, looked for relative abundance in the effluent at Penn State, ended up choosing sulfamethoxazole, trimethoprim-enofloxacin, partly due to their abundance and frequency of prescription rates at Penn State, but also because they're considered last-line drugs in some instances for treatment of bacterial infections in human medicine. And so I'm going to be talking about one part of my current study, the Living Filter, where I quantified antibiotics in the influence, the effluence, soil, wheat plants, and groundwater. And I'm also currently looking at antibiotic resistance in soil and water, and that's in progress. So you could possibly look for that later on in upcoming years of the presentation. So first, I just wanted to show you what my study site, the astronomy site, the Living Filter looks like. So you know when I say things like collecting groundwater, where I was collecting it, when I talk about the wheat plants and the soil sampling. And so you can see these little red round dots are where the groundwater wells are. They're located all around the site. And for reference, these blue lines right here are all the irrigation lines. So if you see a blue line, that's where irrigation could occur. So you can see the groundwater wells are around the site. There's a few that are on site. It's a great way of monitoring the impacts of this system on the groundwater. For my wheat sampling, which happened a couple years ago, is this yellow square right here, and my soil sampling was this blue square right here. And the wheat sampling, I did both pre-harvest, 3 weeks before harvest, and at harvest soil sampling. I did three samplings altogether, one prior to an application, effluent application, one directly after one effluent application, and then later on in early fall after repeated effluent applications over the summer. So just quickly, I wanted to show you the chemical analysis I did for reference after soil collection or water recollection. The soil and the wheat went through accelerated solvent extraction. The eluent from the ACE, or accelerated solvent extraction, and the water samples all went through solid phase extraction, and then everything was quantified with liquid chromatography tandem mass spectrometry. So I'm going to get right into the data. I'm going to start at the beginning of the system, which is at the wastewater treatment plant, and work my way through to soil, the wheat plants, and then the groundwater. And so really, I'm not going to focus too much on the influent because I just did that really to see what was going in, but really the focus is on what's actually going out into the system. But typically, in both the influent and effluent, the concentrations vary by the time of the year. That's because it's a student population. This wastewater treatment plant serves Penn State. So spring and fall, you're going to have higher populations of students. Summer, you're going to have lower populations. Typically, spring had the highest concentrations in both the influent and the effluent. There seemed to be higher prescription rates at that time, too, due to illnesses. But you can see with the influent here, if I can get the mouse going, and I apologize, the colors look a little bit better there. On the computer, they don't look so great. You can see we have hundreds of nanogram per liter up to thousands or microgram per liter ranges. And then when you go to the effluent, you can see here in the summer 2015, we're looking at less than 10 nanogram per liter for all of them. And then you can look at highs here in spring of 2014, where sulfamethoxazole had a high of 22 micrograms per liter. So you can see we have a great deal of range in the concentrations. And overall, sulfamethoxazole is typically highest in the effluent going out. So next, I'm going to talk about the soil sample results. I'm still working on these, so they're not as fine-tuned as I would like them to be yet, but I wanted to show you exact typical trends that I'm seeing. And so first, I'm going to look at this left figure right here. And so the first thing is this green line right here. That's sulfamethoxazole before one effluent application. And what was really nice about the site that I was working with, they hadn't applied effluent for the entire winter. So there had been 8 months where this particular site had not received any effluent. So it was just sitting there. And so I took some samples right before one effluent application and some after, just to see if I would see a difference, if I was going to find anything in the before samples and whether I would see an increase in just one effluent application. And first of all, I did see concentrations of both sulfamethoxazole and ofloxacin before the effluent application. Trimethoprim, I could not detect it. And so just to point out some concentrations, before sulfamethoxazole was about 400 nanograms per kilogram, and then after it bumps up to about 470 nanograms per kilogram. I'm just focusing at the surface concentrations. I just showed down through the profile so you get an idea of what those concentrations are, but I'm not going to focus on them. And then after, before ofloxacin, before was about 500 nanograms per kilogram, and then after it goes up to about 600 nanograms per kilogram. Now, I don't have any statistical analysis on this yet, but just in general, you can see there appears to be an increase. Now, the next figure on the right is actually after repeated effluent applications throughout the entire summer. Just for reference, the site did have wheat planted on it during that time period too, which is why it was receiving so many effluent irrigations. And the big thing in this graph is that after repeated effluent applications over the entire summer, I was actually able to quantify trimethoprim. It wasn't extremely high. It wasn't as high as the other compounds, but it shows that after repeated applications, you're actually starting to see concentrations of trimethoprim. Whereas if you leave, apparently it appears if you leave this site go for an extended period of time, it dissipates. And one effluent application doesn't seem to create a buildup of it, at least where I could quantify it. And you can see it's about 150 nanograms per kilogram at the surface. The other big thing that I noticed was sulfamethoxazole increases compared to the previous sampling. You're seeing a concentration at the surface of over 700 nanograms per kilogram. And the other thing is ofloxacin about 500 nanograms per kilogram. So it kind of stays about the same. And also talk a little bit about ofloxacin in this Next slide. So overall, we're seeing ofloxacin concentrations highest following a cold winter, but it appears a drop after warm summer months. But I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. Sulfamethoxazole concentrations appear to be highest following repeated applications. And again, what I said about trimethoprim, only quantified after repeated effluent applications. So moving on, I'm going to talk about the wheat samples. And just first, with pre-harvest, the biggest things here, finding variable surface concentrations, is the spray irrigation. We were kind of expecting that. And the only uptake we saw was in straw with ofloxacin. Then at harvest, we're again seeing variable surface concentrations. Again, we're seeing uptake of ofloxacin into the straw itself. And then we're also seeing uptake of ofloxacin and sulfamethoxazole into the grain. And you can see here, this is in nanograms per kilogram. We're seeing 2,300 nanograms per kilogram of ofloxacin and 640 nanograms per kilogram of sulfamethoxazole. And what I was saying about ofloxacin, where the concentration after repeated applications doesn't appear to increase. Now, of course, I had to do more statistical analysis, but anecdotally, it does get taken up into the wheat plant. You see quite a bit in the straw, and then also into the grain. So that may be what might be happening with ofloxacin in that instance, that we're not seeing the higher concentrations in the soil. That's just anecdotal, but it's something to think about where you're looking at dynamics in a soil environment. You have to think about both uptake, but also transport. And finally, I have my groundwater samples. The biggest thing I wanted to point out here is typically we're seeing concentrations below limit of quantification or below limit detection, specifically on the western side of the site. For reference, groundwater moves from northwest to southeast. So you're seeing groundwater movement in this direction. And that's where you find most, if I'm able to quantify the compounds, it's typically in these wells over here, P2 and P1. High concentration, sulfamethoxazole is typically highest. You see a high of 313 nanograms per liter. And then trimethoprim and ofloxacin are typically lower. Trimethoprim, rarely I quantify it. Here you have a high of 8 nanograms per liter, and ofloxacin a high of 67 nanograms per liter. But if you compare to what was in the effluent, this is pretty much lower than what you're finding there. And so finally, in conclusion, we're finding antibiotics in the influent, the effluent, the groundwater, the soil, and the wheat, pretty much throughout the system. Sulfamethoxazole is typically highest concentrations in most samples. We saw in the soil, sometimes it's not. and again, in the wheat plants. Ofloxacin is present in most samples, but concentrations drop dramatically in the environment, especially whenever you get to the groundwater. And trimethoprim appears to dissipate fairly quickly in the environment. It's one of the compounds that I rarely would quantify after the effluent leaves the wastewater treatment plant and goes out into the environment. And so really the concentration of the environment, if you do back calculations, like if you ate the typical amount of wheat a human would, or if you drank only that groundwater, it'd be about a millionfold lower than a typical daily dose of antibiotics prescribed for human medicine. So you're not worried about overt toxicity. Really, the questions are about long-term health effects due to antibiotic resistance development. And so that's actually my current and future work. And with that, I would like to thank everyone. And if we have time for questions, thank I'll you. Take one.
Again, the same thing. Excellent talk. Only one question.
Yeah, it was surprising. Now, the one thing that we believe might be happening, this is a long-term irrigation site. There might actually be some preferential flow pathways. There's been a lot of research done on that. Jack, my advisor, he does a lot with transport, and he might be able to better answer that question, but we do believe that there's some sort of preferential pathways going on. And the other thing, there's the groundwater wells that are put in. You could also have short-circuiting down there. There's a lot of different factors that could come into play with that.
Okay, the gentleman with the chair, you had a question.
Yeah, okay, so are these concentrations of the literature say that these can, you know, is there something that says that at this dose you can cause fast scale, you know, antibiotics in the environment?
There is, I don't know if you could say conclusively that you could cause mastocytic antibiotic resistance in the environment. There's a lot of studies showing that by introducing these compounds in the environment, you can increase antibiotic resistance. People look at antibiotic resistant genes, people look at antibiotic resistant bacteria. I have some research from just this site showing that if you look at certain antibiotic resistant genes, you see increased numbers of these genes at the sites. You also see some interesting trends going down the soil profile where, compared to a control site, I'm seeing higher numbers of resistant genes going down the soil profile compared to at a control site. Because these compounds are there and they're present down through the soil profile. I didn't focus going down, but you could see you're seeing like 500, 200 nanograms per kilogram going down the soil profile.
Thank you. Okay.